morning. We'd like to start today's chapel by singing together number 27 in Sing the Journey, God of the Bible. If you would please stand and join with us. We'll be singing all the verses except verse 4.
Muy buenos días y bienvenidos a todos. Gracias por venir esta mañana. Esperamos que podamos compartir un pedacito de nuestras experiencias de este semestre pasado.
Good morning and welcome to everybody. Thank you for coming this morning. We hope that we can share a little bit of our experiences that we've had this past semester. We are a group of 21 students and two professors, a group of diverse interests, as demonstrated by our 17 different majors. Yet for some reason or another, we found ourselves together on this trip, sharing difficult and beautiful experiences with one another, and coming to appreciate the gifts that each individual brought to the group.
We began our journey at the United States and Mexico border, where we spent 1 week learning about the complex and challenging issues of immigration on both sides. The majority of our cross-cultural experience was in Guatemala, each of us living with a host family in the country's capital for 8 weeks and attending Spanish classes. Finally, we concluded our study abroad in Cuba, where we were challenged and amazed by the differences in culture, politics, infrastructure, and landscape, among many other things.
In each of these places and throughout the trip, a whole lot of first times happened. For some of us, it was the first time leaving the country.
The first time flying.
The first time using Spanish as a primary way of communication.
The first time navigating through a big city.
The first time stepping foot in a desert.
The first time hiking a volcano.
The first time exploring ancient caves used by Mayans for rituals.
And the first time placing a hand on the beams of the United States and Mexico border wall. While many of our experiences were firsts, this cross-cultural offered the unique opportunity to become familiar and comfortable with a country that felt so unfamiliar and so uncomfortable upon arriving. We became comfortable with the daily walk or ride to school.
Making mistakes in Spanish.
Long bus rides on Guatemala's broken highways.
Saying hello and goodbye with a kiss on the cheek.
Eating eggs, rice, beans, and lots of bread.
And the relationships built within this group. We understand that 30 minutes is not sufficient to capture what we experienced these past 3.5 months. Through this chapel, our goal is to offer stories and reflections on a small portion of our trip, and we look forward to continued questions and conversations with you all after this time of sharing.
Build a wall. This was the phrase repeatedly shouted during the 2016 election. However, for the people of Agua Prieta, Mexico, the border wall is already a part of their reality. They felt its looming presence for many years now. Around the time of NAFTA in 1994, the number of border crossings greatly increased. In order to stem some of this migration, Bill Clinton signed off on Operation Safeguard, Hold the Line, and Gatekeeper, which built stretches of border wall in Texas, Arizona, and California. The walls were constructed in urban areas as they theorized that the desert would act as a lethal deterrent. However, the desert did not turn out to be a deterrent, and many migrants died in the desert searching for a better life. After the recession of 2008, border crossings surged again. Obama signed off on the construction of a new wall, one much higher and longer than Clinton's. This is the wall that now stands between the communities of Agua Prieta, Mexico, and Douglas, Arizona. Today, there are many stakeholders at the border wall. On the Mexico side, the drug cartels control the land and the guides called coyotes who show migrants the way through the desert. Migrants pay thousands of dollars for this dangerous journey, and attempting it alone or stepping on cartel land without permission means almost certain death. The Border Patrol controls the U.S. side. They work to keep people and drugs from crossing the border without permission. They have motion detectors, cameras, and weight sensors, which monitor movement around much of the border. The conflict at the border is less of a physical war and more a war of information. And this war is a daily reality for the people of Douglas and Agua Prieta.
So now we'll share a few impactful experiences from our time in Mexico. After a few days at the border, we were invited to participate in a prayer vigil for those who lost their lives in transit, crossing the desert around Douglas and Agua Prieta. Piles of white crosses, like this one, were passed out, each with a name and date, or no identificado, painted on in black. Walking along the street leading to the port of entry, we called out the names on our crosses and lay them on the curb as the rest of the group shouted, "Presente," signifying that those who lost their lives were still remembered. Afterwards, we stood in a circle by the wall, praying for three people chosen from the crosses, and prayed also for the people they left behind, and for everyone who sees crossing the border as their only choice, their last resort. Those statistics, the ones we had been learning throughout our time, became personified. The hundreds of deaths became hundreds of crosses, with stories behind each number and name. So in the same manner as the vigil, today at the end of this chapel, we name people important to us on our trip, from host families, Casas, Mexico, Cuba, and other parts of our travels. Their presence was with us today and throughout our semester, and they're here with us today. They're very much alive, and their stories are now a part of ours as we move on from here.
One of the many impactful experiences we had in Mexico was driving out into the desert with an organization called Agua para Vida, which means water for life. The 23 of us in our group piled into two vans, and we followed the organization's pickup truck for 2 hours into the desert. Our destination was a large blue water tank on a ranch right next to the border wall, which we helped fill up with water to leave for migrants passing through. But this wasn't just any old ranch. The land we were on was completely controlled by the drug cartel, and the only reason Agua para Vida can do what they do here is because of special permission they receive on specific days to bring water here for migrants. Same goes for migrants who want to pass through this area. They must pay several thousand pesos to the cartel in order to cross their land. Afterward, we sat down in the cold, windy desert for a Bible study, relating Jesus' journey in the desert to what thousands of migrants go through daily. This experience was eye-opening for all of us, and Agua Para Vida was a great example of an organization who puts both their faith and their beliefs into practice.
Hospitality. This was a theme throughout our semester, but we first felt it in our week along the U.S.-Mexico border. Generous, rich, undeserved hospitality. How is it that our country is doing everything to keep them out, and yet so many Mexican families generously opened their homes to us? An easy takeaway from our time at the border would be the wall, but what I remember is doors. Doors to homes and hearts and lives always being open to us without hesitation. There is one woman in particular who really exemplified this. Her name is Ada. She has 5 beautiful children and a husband we barely met because he was always working. She had us over to her home twice during the short week we had there and cooked us breakfast on a number of other occasions. I remember her telling us that her home is our home now, too. She shared a story with us of one time there was an EMU group in her house and they were surrounded by armed members of a drug cartel. The cartel had seen 2 white vans carrying EMU students pull up and mistakenly thought there was some sort of deal going down. Everyone was okay in the end. The EMU students were able to run away to Arizona while Ada stayed in her home with her children, praying that the cartel wouldn't come back. And yet what seemed to scare her the most was that this incident would stop EMU groups from coming back. It meant so much to her that we were simply there, eating her delicious food, interacting with her lovely family. I wrote her a letter at the end of the week on behalf of the group, and we thanked her in person a lot of times too. I hope we were able to express what an honor it was to be in her home and hear her story. The words thank you seem really feeble sometimes in the face of such kindness, and this semester forced me sometimes to just accept hospitality for what it is, a gift.
So from Mexico, we flew to Guatemala, where we spent most of the next several months. So we'd like to now share a little bit of historical background from this beautiful and complicated country. For thousands of years, Mayan civilizations flourished in Central America, developing advanced masonry, astronomy, art, mathematics, and agricultural technology, while Europe was still struggling through the Dark Ages. But Mayan life was forever changed with the arrival of Europeans to Guatemala in 1524. With the spoken intent of bringing Christianity to the native people, Spanish immigrants brought epidemics, ethnocide, dispossession, and slavery. Inequality and extreme racism against indigenous people was virtually unchallenged until 1944, when a pro-democracy coup overthrew the dictatorship that ruled Guatemala at the time. For the next 10 years, progressive presidents enacted land reforms, literacy campaigns, free elections, and other much-needed change. Though this era was good for Guatemala, it was poorly received by foreign countries who'd been making huge profits from exploitative agricultural businesses. United Fruit Company, a U.S. business, was especially dismayed when its land was nationalized and its highly profitable sharecropping slavery system was overturned. United Fruit and other companies began to pressure the U.S. government to protect their financial interests. So the U.S. organized a CIA-directed coup, claiming that it was intervening to topple the communist Guatemalan government. The only problem with that explanation was that the Guatemalan government at the time was not communist, led by democratically elected President Jacobo Arbenz. Nonetheless, the U.S. trained and armed insurgents, implemented psychological warfare, and directed the assassination of government officials, replacing a democratic government with an oppressive military dictatorship and beginning a civil war that lasted for 36 years.
Following the United States-induced President Arbenz's departure, Guatemala fell into a deep state of violence and oppression. Citizens could not leave their homes at night, corruption became a normality, and individuals feared for their lives constantly on a daily basis. Systemic racism was highly evident and occurred in all shapes and forms. Indigenous individuals were considered to be inferior. They were looked down upon and worked jobs such as maids, guards, and gardeners. The country broke into a deep civil war, resulting in genocide against indigenous Mayans. Rios Montt, a former president, was in power during the bloodiest time of the Civil War. Later on, he was arrested and charged on January 13, 2013 for acts of genocide, but was later released on a slight court technicality. Now, in Guatemala today, they still face many of the same issues. Indigenous people are paid less and are seen as invisible in society compared to fair-skinned Latino individuals of Spanish European descent. 11 families that are descendants of the original Spanish conquerors run Guatemala today. They control every industry from fried chicken to oil, and everything runs through them. The government relies on them to make decisions, and they highly influence Guatemala's politics and policies. Guatemala is a beautiful place, however, its ghosts of the past definitely still haunt it today.
So now I'm going to share a poem that I wrote during our time in Guatemala. It's called Bitter Fruit, and it's named after a book I was reading at the time about a CIA organized intervention in Guatemala. Bitter Fruit. My lips burn from the sun and the limes. They hurt, but I can't stop smiling, because here I am in Guatemala, and it is beautiful. But it hurts to smile because I know beneath the surface of the yummy food and the kind people and the vibrant communities and the volcanoes and the flowers and the one-cheek kisses, there are the bones of the massacred. They're quiet. And so are those of us still alive, treading softly, trying not to speak too much about how they were killed as if not to offend them. Genocide is a word we're afraid to say. Ethnocide of entire indigenous communities. Perpetrated by a government that my government supported, trained, supplied, installed. Ronald Reagan shook hands with Rios Montt, and 30 years later, there are still mothers waiting for their sons to come home. And my lips burn from the bitterness because democracy was here. Democracy was here, and we stole it. I am a tourist of the horrors wrought by my own government. And God help me, it is so beautiful here. Beautiful, but far too quiet.
In the midst of learning about the challenging history of Guatemala, we also found ways to see its beauty. These are stories from our time in Guatemala. During our stay in Guatemala City, we took 8 weeks of intensive Spanish classes with an organization called Semilla. For some people, their day would start as early as 5:30 in the morning, leaving their host family, because of horrific traffic that clogs up the city. When arriving to school, we would have little time to tell each other about our experiences about the night before. The bell for classes would ring at 8:30, and we would all disperse into our 2 to 3 person classrooms and begin working hard on the day's tasks. Spanish classes would end around 12:30, and we would all gather in the cafeteria for a delicious lunch that we have all been smelling during our classes. After our lunch, we would have around an hour until our EMU classes would start. In this time, there were some exhilarating hacky sacking sessions, some reading and journaling, and some power napping. When 2 o'clock came around, we would have speakers come and inform us of the important themes of the culture, economy, and political situation in Guatemala City. So that is what a normal day looks like in Semilla, and we are so fortunate to have had the facilities and the amazing teachers they provided for us.
So throughout our time in the city, we were exposed to a wide range of socioeconomic levels. We called this our contrast war, where we saw the poorest parts of the society in contrast to the richest parts. So on our first week in Guatemala City, we went and visited a basurero, which is a huge landfill with hundreds of people rummaging through the trash as their job to try to find anything that they can use to sell, all while thousands of vultures are circling above. And they only make about 10 to 20 quetzales, which is only $1.50 to $3 a day. But then the next day, we went and visited a huge mall called Kayala. Everything was white, everything was clean, and everything was really expensive. We were given 10 Q, the daily wage of a worker in the basurero, and were told to find something that we could buy. But we could buy almost nothing. After this tour, we had to come to terms with the fact that we were much more comfortable in the fancy mall. We felt safe, and we were more at home than in a lot of places in Guatemala.
High in Guatemala's mountains sits Alta Verapaz, a region dotted with extremely rural farming communities, nestled in one rapidly disappearing cloud forest. The views are unparalleled, literally breathtaking, and I would know. I wheezed all the way up one of those mountainsides. There's a catch, though, with all of this expanse of natural beauty. We're losing it. And unfortunately, as with a lot of things in Guatemala, the U.S. is involved. Maybe not quite as involved as, say, in the Guatemalan Civil War, but still not great. You see, these farmers are stuck essentially in agricultural debt slavery, growing things like broccoli for our schools and prisons here in the U.S. Oof. Stark poverty and environmental degradation go hand in hand there, as in many places. However, one organization is doing its best to help, the Community Cloud Forest Conservation Center, largely run by Rob and Tara Cahill and community members. There, they're running environmental ed programs, teaching classes in women's health, and sponsoring agroforestry plots to improve both human nutrition and biodiversity in the cloud forest. We had the incredible privilege of being able to stay in the center and with rural host families for 2 nights. For many of us, it was a hard but thought-provoking 5 days. And the beauty. I will always remember standing on that neck-breakingly steep hill, ankle-deep in broccoli, clouds swirling through the trees over my head. The cross I'll be holding today carries the name of my littlest host sister in Alta Verapaz, Claudia.
As you may have gathered, we each stayed in a host family during our 8 weeks of Spanish class in Guatemala. We were each in our own house with our own siblings and pets. We each lived in different zones of the city. We each had our own routes and modes of transportation to and from school, and each had our own unique experiences. While we all had varying experiences, I think it's safe to say we all learned a lot of Spanish from them and had a lot of valuable interactions. One small but impactful moment I had was with my brother Arnaldo during our hour-long car ride home. As we were sitting in traffic, we came across a woman on the side of the road begging for money. Seeing her, he reached in his wallet and fished out a few quetzales and handed them out the window. I made some comment in my very limited Spanish, like, "Oh, what a nice brother I have." But he looked at me very seriously and replied, "Even though I don't have a job right now, I know I will have a lot more opportunities to make money than she ever will, and I just want to be a nice person." He recognized his privilege and the opportunities he has, which moved him to be generous. I hope this small interaction inspires me to live more generously, as I have even more privilege and opportunity than him living in the United States. It was small interactions like these that we will all remember from our host family stays.
Semana Santa, translated to Holy Week. This is the week of Easter that is celebrated all over Guatemala, but there's a special tradition in Antigua. We were able to spend this Holy Week in Antigua and experience their powerful symbols of worship and illustrations of the death and resurrection of Jesus. At almost any hour of the day or night, there'd be a procession in the streets. Their music and chants echoed on the cobblestone, and the smell of incense wafted around the whole city. Each procession had its own theme, telling a specific part of the Easter story. Some floats were carried by all women as a symbol of worshiping Mary and honoring women. Others were carried by all men. These floats were topped with sculptures of these holy figures, making them extremely heavy. We learned that each person involved in these holy processions pay money to be there. This was very impactful, knowing that what very little money they have, they give to be a part of this display of worship. Alfombras, artwork made of brightly dyed sawdust, coated the streets. Holy Week in Antigua was a week full of delicious food, beautiful artwork, music, and moving processions. It was a spiritual experience for all of us.
Well, on our week of free travel, our group of four found ourselves in the town of El Estor, wanted to go to some thermal waterfalls a half hour away. Since we didn't really know how to get there, we walked to the main road, hoping to find a bus or something. While we were standing there, not knowing what to do, a guy in a pickup pulled up behind us and asked if we were going to the hot waterfalls. We were surprised, but since there were teens in towels and swimsuits in the back of the pickup, we got in. Turns out he was with his family from another part of Guatemala, and they accepted us in as part of their family for the day. He acted as our personal guide, showing us secret caves behind the falls, sharing the mineral mud they had bought, and just taking care of us clueless gringos. He even insisted on giving us a ride back. He shared about his past, from being a refugee from two separate civil wars to now being a Catholic missionary. This is but one example of the incredible hospitality shown by the people of Guatemala.
We then moved on to Havana, Cuba, where we expected to find the people to be oppressed by a communist dictatorship. Instead, we found many people to be happy with the free universal health care and education their government provides. Not full, but content with the government rations of food, medicines, and household items. We learned that despite what the U.S. has done to the nation of Cuba, its citizens attribute those faults to our government, not its people, and welcomed us with open arms and wide smiles. We learned some of their culture, music, forgiving nature, optimism, nationalistic pride, and we tried to learn to dance. We learned that despite the turmoil and obstacles we have put in place for Cuba, they offered assistance to the U.S. after 9/11, Katrina, and was the first nation to send doctors to fight Ebola.
We spoke to Saulo Serrano, a Cuban artist loved by his people, who to this day struggles to make his art appear the way he wants because he can't get supplies he needs due to the blockade our government has put in place. Despite this, he said, "Mi casa es su casa," allowed us to pick through his art and even offered us food from his fridge. We saw in their smiles and heard in their voices their hopefulness and love for their neighbors. However, we also saw a change of mentality amongst the youth. We heard stories of longing for opportunity, to earn more for their families, for a chance to earn something with their education, and striving for the American dream. 10 days was nowhere near enough time to fully understand the complexities of this beautiful country. We are all planning to dig deeper to understand more about Cuba.
So now that our time away has come to a close, we have to figure out what our experiences mean for us in the context of our familiar lives. We will carry what we learned with us forever, and it will affect our decisions in many ways, both consciously and unconsciously. But for now, we have a few ideas of what we can do to use this gift of education that we have been given and to give back somehow. We met many organizations along the way that are doing incredible work. Supporting these organizations with our time or money is certainly one way that we can help. But more importantly, we can help by sharing the stories of the people we met. This was always the first thing people said when we asked them what we could do. Share our story. Go back home and tell people about what you saw and heard. Tell them about the real people whose lives are part of the seemingly black and white issues we hear about in the news every day. And by telling these stories, we make these issues less political and more personal.
We have been inspired to give back in other ways, too. Some of us might return to Guatemala or to the U.S.-Mexico border. Others of us might have found a vocation this semester. And still others might have simply been inspired to get involved in our own communities. We have certainly all become more aware of our privilege, and some of us have started to take concrete actions to change how we live and how we think about the world. But however we decide to make an impact, we will all keep thinking about what we experienced this semester, the things we learned, and the people we met. For in the words of Israel Ortiz, who spoke to us during our time in Guatemala City, "Our challenge as young people is to hold these things, not perfectly, and perhaps not as constantly as we would like, but to hold them intentionally, because we are called to human dignity." We are now going to each go through and say a commitment that we are making now that we are back, and the names of the people on our crosses. My commitment is to look for the ways that the same forces of power and privilege that I saw in Guatemala are playing out in my home community. And the name on my cross is Albertina Yak, who is my Spanish teacher at Casas.
To continue to be brave, Anais, our translator in Cuba.
Appreciate my education more. Carla, our host family coordinator.
Keep telling the stories we heard this semester. Claudia, host sister.
To listen more intently, Morataya, my host family's last name.
To be more grateful for the opportunities I've been given, Reina, our cook at Casas.
To speak Spanish every day, Mark Adams, pastor and community leader in Agua Prieta.
to be more intentional about listening to other stories. Raul, our driver with MCC.
To learn to sit with discomfort and fear. Polka Gallegos, pastor in Mexico.
To love selflessly, like my host family. Jose Carlos, my host brother.
To listen and ask more questions. Isaac Baldecci, our translator and friend from Mexico.
To be more willing to learn from others. Priscilla, my Spanish teacher at Casas.
To be more humble and give back with the resources that I've been given. Javier Mata, my host brother.
To engage in and recognize the power of conversation, Marito Leon Lopez, my host brother.
To be more intentional about reusing and recycling, Rob Cahill, environmental activist and group leader.
To be more inspired and learn from others, Edgar, our driver from Samia.
To have more meaningful conversations, Carmen Eliada, our leader in Cuba.
To keep learning, Ada, friend from Mexico.
To live generously, like my host mom, Milagros Figueroa.
To be more generous, Tara Cahill, environmental activist and leader in Coban.
To extend more hospitality to the least of these, Salo Serrano, Cuban artist. So we would like to invite Byron and Lisa to the stage. So on behalf of our group, we would like to thank you for all the hard work and time and effort that you put into organizing and leading this cross-cultural. I really can't imagine, and I think I speak for everyone when I say that I can't imagine going on this trip with anyone else. So thank you. And we have a stack of postcards for each of you with a little note from all of us, as well as some plants.
So Lisa, we'd like to thank you for all your health knowledge, all the conversations you had with us this semester, for learning alongside of us, and for taking our crap, literally. And Byron, thank you so much for all your wisdom and knowledge that you shared with us throughout this trip. Thank you for being our number one dad and always providing us with unknown snacks when we least expected it, but needed them the most.